Robbie Diamond, president of SAFE, Securing America's Future Energy. Great title. Are you fulfilling that mission that you're on?
I think we're doing a great job, although it's still a tale of two cities. I mean, we should look. America's production is an all-time high for its oil.
That really worked for you.
I think that's great. And if one looks at demand for oil in the country, certainly we've been using it more efficiently than we have in the past. And that's a good thing as well. The
sure.
question is can we maintain those two trajectories? Continue to produce oil as well as use it efficiently. And then the third leg of the stool, which I think is the biggest open question and maybe the most important thing, is how do we bring alternatives into the market? So we're not totally dependent on oil. How do we get natural gas and natural gas vehicles? How do we get electricity and electric vehicles and other types of fuels into the transportation market so we're not hostage?
What are the other alternative fuels you're interested in?
We really want to be technology neutral and let the market decide as much as possible. But if one looks at it, there's certainly natural gas, which can be great for some transportation methods, maybe everything. But heavy-duty trucks, I mean, perfectly suited for natural gas. There's a few filling stations. They already have the engine for the trucks. Electric vehicles using electricity, which is abundant and uses domestic fuels, maybe mostly for light-duty vehicles, cars. Biofuels for airplanes, drop-in biofuels. Ultimately, hydrogen could play in the mix. So there's so many out there, and it's amazing that we're really hostage to one fuel source in transportation, and we shouldn't be hostage any longer.
You say hydrogen, it makes me flinch.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember kind of the short life of the dirigible.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember what happened there. I mean, at Lakehurst, New Jersey.
Right.
And all. But hydrogen, to me, I'm not comfortable with that fuel.
Well, like I say, the market will choose over time.
You're not going to use it if it's dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, we're looking for safe, secure fuels, domestic fuels, and diverse fuels.
But it does cause me to backtrack to that period. I think that was like the mid-30s.
Right. Well, like everything else, things changed over time. Technologies get safer. So once again, I just think like we should allow Americans to choose. And the problem now in transportation is Americans have no choice. They have to go and fill up. It's either gasoline, or gasoline.
That's it. But why did it happen that way?
Look, for a long time,
it wasn't mandated gasoline.
It certainly wasn't. In the early days of cars, they had a choice to make. And they were choosing, and gasoline won out. Look, gasoline, I think someone has to have huge respect for. It carries a lot of energy in a very small packets, and it's easily transportable. So to take it out and to bring in alternatives is a huge challenge because oil does naturally something so perfectly well.
Because, one thing, people hate change.
Right.
They don't want it.
Look, if we didn't have other problems with oil, right, global instability, the people who we don't like have it and are, we're paying for it, I wouldn't be in this business. I wouldn't think we'd have to do anything. Oil does what it does very well. But the problem is that our geopolitics, our military policy, our foreign policy, our economy are totally wrapped up in this commodity that we have very little control over on a global scale.
When you say a global scale, today, the United States is energy independent.
That's true, but at the same time, the price is determined on a global market. And so, yes, there's different grades.
You say that, and you've got a $10 spread, an arb between Brent North Sea, global price, and West Texas Intermediate.
Okay, but what are consumers paying? So even when the spread was bigger, the actual gasoline at the pump was determined by the global price or the highest fuel source, and so the refiners were keeping the spread. And so I think about consumers and
The United States has the cheapest fuel in the world.
Yep.
You agree on that?
Yes.
And it could be cheaper, but watch out on the oil price.
The other countries are producing their oil, many countries like Saudi Arabia, at a cheaper price. It costs them much less money to pull it out of the ground than we have it do in the United States.
But the Saudis have a social commitment, which people say, well, it doesn't cost them $5 a barrel. Hey, it's going to cost them, when they tell you they got to have $90 a barrel to meet their social commitments, right, their budget, they're telling you the truth.
Right.
That's a true story. But here, the only way you can actually reduce the price of gasoline, mm-hmm, is by having a competing fuel, right, that's cheaper. And natural gas is, just like you pointed out. I mean, it's really a shame your heavy-duty trucks in America aren't on natural gas. That's the natural place for the natural gas to go.
Hard to believe when such a good technology is in place and we can make this happen pretty quickly that we don't have the national will to make it happen.
You don't have the leadership,
right,
is what it is. And it could happen. But it is happening. Like Raven Trucking from Jacksonville, Florida. The other day, they have over 500 18-wheelers, and they said all of them are going to LNG.
Right.
And they received their first 150 from Peterbilt.
Rusty
Roush, right, is the biggest Peterbilt dealer in the United States. And he markets Peterbilt trucks about over 30% of them. And he is very interested in natural gas for those trucks. But that's a 12-liter engine,
right,
that they have, and it's a new 12-liter engine from Cummings.
So first of all, we have you to thank. I mean, based on your...
You're really being generous now.
Well, you know, you've started and backed one of the company that can make this possible, and you've spent countless hours in your own capital just telling the country that this is a big problem, and I think that leadership is hugely important.
Well,
and those companies probably wouldn't do it if you were not in this sort of game or whatever you want to call it,
well,
this serious business.
You look at one of your backers at Safe,
yeah,
Fred Smith.
Yep.
I mean, if you started naming the five best leaders in the United States, he'd be in the top five, maybe number one.
Maybe we can convince him to run for president.
Would that be great? I'm not being funny.
Yeah,
I'm being very honest.
Me too.
Yeah, Fred Smith is a very patriotic guy. He's a Marine and a very, very smart businessman.
One thing I think worth pointing out is not just about price of oil, but also the volatility of oil prices. I think that's a big danger for this country and for the world. So the CEO of United Airlines had a great quote, to paraphrase him, Jeff Smyzik, he said, you know, I can run a profitable airline at $50 a barrel, and I can run a profitable airline at $150, but they're two totally different airlines. They have different routes, different planes. And right now, with the price dropping 56% over a four-month period after, you know, OPEC makes a decision in Vienna, you know, not only are our producers, you know, experiencing the pain, but all the natural gas, you know, vehicle companies.
OPEC didn't drop the price.
I didn't say they dropped it, but...
We dropped it. It was an industry in the United States.
Right, but just the volatility, which comes from geopolitical problems, comes from, look, even not making a decision is making a decision. So I just think you've been in the oil business all your whole life. As you know, the prices swings rapidly, and that swing is very dangerous for consumers, Americans, and businesses to plan ahead. And if we had more choice in the fuel market,
right,
we might have more stable pricing, and we wouldn't see companies go bankrupt. And
but you're going to be back at $70 a barrel by the end of the year.
Right.
Because you've shut down all the drilling rigs in the United States.
And so this yo-yo is a big problem, and I think by having this fuel choice, we won't have to experience that.
OPEC, you say, one cartel, and they control the price. No, their swing producer does.
Yes.
Saudi Arabia. The others produce max out all the time. Saudis have... some, I don't think, as much unused capacity as they claim.
Right.
All right. But when they announced, mm-hmm, this time, we are not going to cut, mm-hmm, to stabilize the market, mm-hmm, they meant it. The Naimi, I think, is an honest, credible person.
Right.
And his reputation is important to him as mine is to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I told him I wasn't going to cut, I'm not going to cut. They didn't cut,
mm-hmm,
and shifted the swing producer to the United States.
Right.
And we took care of the price and the oversupply by shutting down the rigs, which is a normal market reaction, a free market reaction.
Right. Look, it's a clumsy cartel, but it is a cartel, and sometimes they'll have more power and sometimes they have less power. And hard to know, you know, why decisions are made. But I just say that the volatility, which we've seen over a 40-year period,
sure,
since the market changed and OPEC had the first oil embargo, has, you know, seen our companies, CEOs been fired, companies merge, you know, new technologies die on the vine. So we just need to find a way to have this choice. So like how we produce electricity, there's lots of different fuels in transportation. We shouldn't be hostage to one. And that's what we're working towards. And I think that the market, even with U.S. supply, is still going to be volatile because of the nature of the market. And so we still should be doing what we're trying to do of getting new fuels onto competitive fuels into transportation.
I agree with you 100%. Having said that it's interesting the way things have gone in the Mideast,
mm-hmm,
where now the United States does not need oil from the Mideast.
Mm-hmm.
And we're stuck there because we have a very, very important partner.
Right.
And that partner needs our assistance. We went there because of oil. Do you remember how far back that goes?
Certainly the Carter Doctrine is something that's famous in the oil markets, but it started, either the aircraft carrier when the Saudi princes met with the President of the United States and talked about the U.S. role in the region, right?
I didn't know of that. I know of this. The Arab embargo,
right,
was when Washington, I think, decided that we were always going to be dependent on Mideast oil.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, the Fifth Fleet was based out of Bahrain, and we went into the area, and we've been there ever since.
Right.
It's interesting because we don't need the oil. This geologist would have,
right,
you had asked me 20 years ago, 10 years ago, would we ever be, mm-hmm, have plenty of oil in America? I would have said, no, we're declining and we will never recover from the decline.
Right.
At that point, we were down to 4 million barrels a day. Today, we're 9.5 million.
Right.
Unbelievable,
right,
what the industry did. And that, again, is our system, the capitalistic system, does pay off.
Right.
It does make things happen.
Absolutely.
And it did. So, okay, what do you want to talk
now,
about?
But sometimes, you know, we need our system to help get some of these newer technologies that will provide this sort of long-term stability over the hump through the valley of death. Because sometimes there are chicken egg problems, there's infrastructure issues.
Yeah, but you know what your problem is on that?
Yeah.
Washington doesn't understand energy.
Right.
They don't know what hump to help over, push back, or anything. They don't understand energy.
So I think there are more free market ways of doing this and less, and we should look for the most free market ways to do this.
Yes.
And, you know, just one example of that is there are companies now with financing mechanisms to pay some of the higher upfront costs, but then share in the savings of the vehicle, because most of these alternatives take much less money to actually over time fuel. So there's the free market solving this problem.
But you're saying there has to be some help to get in. It has to have time.
Right. Yeah, they need time. They need, you know, infrastructure. We have a system that's 100-something years old of gas stations and cars, of course. That's got an incumbency that makes it very hard, difficult for others.
And this is the car capital of the world. I mean, everybody 16 years old thinks they're going to have a car.
Although, I'm telling you, autonomous vehicles that will drive themselves, that is, I think, over the horizon. You're talking about 20 years. I just spent last week in Silicon Valley, and all the automakers have opened up facilities there, and you've got Apple and Google and everyone else.
What are they doing?
They're literally figuring out how to have driverless cars. And when they look at young people who would rather be texting rather than paying attention to the road, this is why they see this as something.
Are people going to drive? Are going to ride in these driverless cars?
That's the belief. And
not this guy.
Well, we'll see how that goes. I was going to say that, you know, if you look at the problem and the people we were able to recruit to do this, you know, Fred Smith of FedEx and General PX Kelly, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, really speaks
well,
to.
Well, they're your partners. They were guys with vision.
Right, and General Kelly started CENTCOM, the Central Command, the one in charge of the Middle East. He started the Rapid Reaction Joint Task Force before President Carter that created this problem or this, you know, this entity that was securing supply for the world.
When was that, 77?
Around that time, yeah.
Well, it has to be because he went out of office in 80.
Right.
Carter did. So it had to be right there in the late 70s.
And then you've got Fred Smith, who has, you know, 85,000 vehicles, 900 airplanes, and is able to deliver packages around the world overnight. I mean,
Fred can deliver them before they're shipped.
Teleporting, just like those autonomous vehicles. That will be the next thing. But, you know, here's a guy who has the clipper ships of the modern age. And if we don't have, oil is the blood of our mobile global economy. And he understood why this is such a problem. And, you know, him and General Kelly and yourself, you know, being people who have built this country, see this as a problem on the horizon. It's amazing that my generation can listen and implement what all of you are saying we should do.
Transportation, it's here to stay. And I don't know how you would ever substitute. I thought, could they, if you were in Washington and I was in Dallas, and our minds met, and you wanted to be in Dallas, I would be. We could somehow switch places. I don't know
if that's in my lifetime.
I know it's not mine.
You don't even want to get into a self-driving car. I don't know. Do you want to teleport?
Good conversation. We both, I think, pretty well see and understand where we are and what the situation is. Good for America to be energy independent.
Absolutely, and I'm hopeful. I think that having all this supply builds a bridge to a better future where we can have choice for Americans to go to the pump and or decide to fill up on some other fuel type, and that's...
Well, we know oil isn't going to be here forever.
Right.
I mean, every oil field, when you remove the first barrel, it is now in depletion. It's now declining.
Right.
And you remove more and more and more, and then the field depletes. And that's going to happen to world oil supply.
And even if we don't want to get in that argument, there's enough bad things going on above surface in huge producers of oil that just tell us we should figure out how to get off this roller coaster. The only way to do that is to start filling our trucks on natural gas and our cars and other types of fuel. So
that's
I love working with you on this and look forward to seeing you in the trenches.
Good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.